Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Leonardo da Vinci said, "The Lord gives us everything at the price of effort." Welcome, Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who pays the price of effort. Today's playmaker began working in the family jewelry business as an engraver at the age of 13. With us today is an owner who is a fourth-generation jeweler. This great playmaker is Charles Skibel. Charles is owner of Skibel Fine Jewelry. As I mentioned, he's a fourth-generation jeweler, and again, the owner of Skibel Fine Jewelry, located in Preston Center in Dallas, and they specialize in estate and designer jewelry, custom design, and estate liquidation. At the age of 13, Charles began working at Schlohm's, his great-grandfather's jewelry shop, as an engraver. After earning a degree in psychology from the University of Texas at Austin, Charles ventured to Los Angeles, where he studied at the prestigious Gemological Institute of America and became a graduate gemologist in residence. Charles worked in Beverly Hills, then moved to Dallas, where he worked at Neiman Marcus at North Park in fine jewelry. He then began offering appraisal services when he started Texas Gemological Services. He opened Skibel's Fine Jewelry on Travis Street in Dallas in 1984. The business made Preston Center its home in 1995. Well, Charles, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you.
My question is, how does a psychology degree from UT help the owner of a fine jewelry store?
That's a great question. I think it makes you get to know people. To get a degree in psychology, you have to study people and let people study you, and that has really benefited me almost more than anything else. I enjoy waiting on people. I enjoy studying what people want.
Well, you started engraving at your great-grandfather's store at the age of 13. Was that something that you wanted?
Absolutely.
Or something to earn some money?
Correct. Absolutely not. I hated it. It was the worst of the worst because my capacity to sit and know exactly how to do it was not very good. So I quickly asked my dad if I could do something else.
So you stayed in the jewelry business for a while?
I stayed, yeah. You know, you get out of school and you have a place to go to earn a little money. Exactly.
Well, you went to University of Texas. Your family originally, your parents were from Texas. You went to L.A. What brought you back to Dallas?
Well, I spent a little bit of time back in Mississippi, and Dallas was a perfect place to be in the early.
So you came to Dallas, you went to work at Neiman Marcus, is that correct?
That's correct. And that turned out to be a wonderful catapult for me. That put me right in front. The fine jewelry department at Neiman's North Park was right in the front, and you talk to people. You got your name out there. I lasted just under a year, but I was proud to say I was the only gemologist they had in the chain at that time. And the great thing about it, I still have customers that call on me, or I call on them, from 1981.
You must have met a lot of people.
I met a lot of people. It was fun. You know, it gave you the full experience of meeting women in the a great story. I met this lady in the cosmetic counter, and she liked me. We would go drink coffee at the Mermaid Bar, and when I opened my own store, she became a client. And I said, "Well, I'm so happy that you're coming into my store." She said, "Well, I want to buy some things." So she picks out a pretty necklace, and I start writing the ticket. She says, no, Charles. You never write an invoice until the customer tells you at least three times they're finished shopping. How do you know I'm finished? I may want to buy something else. It was a wonderful lesson for me.
You started your own business, Texas Gemological Services. Now, was that just to do appraisal services at the time?
Right. It was what I knew. I didn't have a real feeling for sales at that time. I quickly learned you can't make a living just doing appraisal work. It's can't charge enough and you don't see enough volume. So we broke into, I had a business partner at the time who I'm still friendly with. We broke into the business. We met a lot of nice people and we did a lot of custom design work. Dallas has probably some of the best custom jewelers in the country right here.
What made you start your own fine jewelry store back in 1984?
Well, it's a great question. I think stupidity. You're at 25 or 6 years old, you think you're bulletproof, and you go into it a little blind. And I was very lucky. I still had my dad and grandfather in Mississippi that I could talk to, and that was always a help. But you learn by fire. And when you're a small business person, that's probably... And you don't make the same mistake twice, hopefully.
But you learned a lot being working in your great-grandfather's business, also working at Neiman's at North Park. But was your family happy? Were they proud of you to know the fourth generation stayed in the jewelry business?
I think so. I've got more of that later in life as my grandfather passed away and my dad retired and then went back into the jewelry business later in life. And it had gone for a full circle where I would sign for him to have credit when it used to be the other way around.
Well, you had something interesting happening. I believe when I was looking at your bio, you were proud to know that Schlom's was the first jewelry store in Mississippi to offer Rolex watches.
Right. There's a cute story. Greenville, Mississippi is right on the Mississippi River, and the towboats would go up and down. And my grandfather got a call from a towboat pilot wanting a Rolex watch. President's was solid gold.
Now, was this still even more exclusive than it is today?
I would say not more exclusive, less known in this country. You know, Rolex is a Swiss company, and the Rolex President wasn't popular yet. Lyndon Johnson made it popular in the 60s. And so he wanted to buy a Rolex head, not on a bracelet, just the head on a strap. I think it was $500. And Rolex sent it in on consignment. They sold it. They said, how would you like to be an account? And we were the first Rolex distributor in the state of Mississippi. I know that to be a fact.
Well, coming back to your store that you're running right now, as I was looking through your bio, I noticed that you were also pet friendly. Being a dog lover, that opens up a world of opportunity, at least for me. I'm always looking for stores that are pet friendly. Has that helped your business, allowing people to bring their pets in?
It does. For me, it breaks it up where, oh, wow, I'm coming to buy a diamond and there's three dogs in the store.
So you have your own dog.
I have my own dog, and that's a great story. My first dog, I decided I didn't want to leave at home anymore. I started bringing the dog to work, and I thought, oh, you know, they may or may not say so. It was a big golden retriever, and so the gentleman that ran the store says, Charles, can you come out to the car? I want to show you something. And I said, well, what is it? He said, just come out. And he bought a puppy just like my dog, because I would send the Dexter up to the office to pay the rent with the check in his mouth, and he loved that. And he was in the store for close to 12 years before he passed away. Now we have a new dog, shop dog.
Let's talk about custom design. What kind of custom design you do? Because that seems like it's a specialty of yours.
It's a unique niche. Custom design is for someone that says, you know, I want the very best. I want it thought through. I want it unique. I want my stamp to be on the product. And it's not easy to do. You have to be patient. You have to tell the customer that it's a several-step process, and we may not get it right the first time. But usually the customer's happy. And the best story, I was at the post office at Turtle Creek in Northwest Highway. I'm in line to send a package, and I see this custom ring that I had made for three kids to give to their mother, and she had it on. And I looked at it, and I said, you know, I made that ring. She said, no, you didn't. My kids did. I said, well, who you think made it for your kids? And I introduced myself, and she was so proud of that piece of jewelry. So it's usually a piece that will stay with the customer.
It becomes an heirloom.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
And it's passed down from
generation. Passed down because it's different. There's not a... it's not one that's in the catalog or a showcase or someone else had done it 100 times. This is one of a kind piece.
So they could come, customers could come to you with just a general idea or a drawing, mm-hmm. and you could take that, work on it, almost like a builder's developing the blueprints to come up with something they want.
Correct. And we do it a lot. A lot of times customers will buy maybe a loose stone on a trip or a cruise. They come back, they don't know what to put it in, or they want to give it away as a gift or to their kids. It's just fun. You know, consumers like to shop, especially on vacation, and they bring it to me to turn it into a piece of jewelry.
Well, you've had your business now in Preston Center for 22 years, since 1995. Is there anything that you're going to begin doing that you haven't done yet? Anything in the future that you're looking at as far as expanding Sky Bowl's fine jewelry?
So another great question. We are slowly breaking into social media. I'm a little bit too old for the computer, so I'm learning the hard way. And we sold our first item on Facebook. A lady saw a posting and called, found us on the internet, said, "I have to have this piece of jewelry today." And we sent it to San Antonio, and she was ecstatic to get it. But it's new. It's different. It's fun, gives you different avenues to which to sell your merchandise. And if you don't change with the business, you're going to be a dinosaur.
Essentially, you have a second retail store on the internet.
Correct.
And people can enter 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Well, this is Playmakers Talk Show. Have you had any specific playmaking idea that led to your success, that caused your jewelry store to become successful?
Well, I stumbled into it. Through my gemological background, we were called in to evaluate estates. And a lot of times the estates were so big I had to bring another gemologist in. And we would appraise the merchandise and look at it. And then we were hoping the trustees would allow us to sell the merchandise. And it was new. We didn't really know exactly how we would do it. But we knew we could, and myself and another gentleman did a big, big appraisal for beautiful jewelry, and at the end of the day, they said, "Well, could you help us sell it?" And that's how we got into what I like to refer to as treasure hunting, because it was our knowledge that allowed us to find the treasure, and from that, we would get calls from trustees of banks and estate planners. And it's jewelry that is unwanted jewelry, not distressed jewelry. So we would either buy it or take it on consignment and sell it for the consumers. And that has been a big plus for our business.
We're speaking with Charles Skibel. Charles is owner of Skibel Fine Jewelry in Preston Center in Dallas. So I walk in your store. We've talked about custom design. We've talked about a little bit about watches from your grandfather's store. But what will I find in your store?
What you'll find is a unique blend of antique jewelry and cutting-edge designer jewelry with a spin on a whole showcase full of dog and cat jewelry. I had the best compliment passed to me by referral. And she was sent in to look at merchandise, and she said, "Charles, I shop all over the country, and I usually walk out of most jewelry stores because they're cookie cutter." But she said, "I can't get past your first case. I like 18 karat yellow gold jewelry. We have a lot of that, which is coming back. I like fine quality. I want it to feel good and have a weight to it where it's not paper thin. And I want to have fun with it." This is my 37th year, so you really have to be excited about your product. And if you're not excited about it, it comes through to the consumer. And we have a fun time. We try to have fun. I have a good cast of characters around me, and they like to have fun. We're open 6 days a week, and so usually I'm there, and I enjoy seeing what a client likes, what they don't like, if there's some way we can help them get from A to B, that's what we do.
We were talking before the show started about the fact that Dallas is more of a jewelry-wearing city than other cities in the United States. How is the industry changing? There's a number of jewelry stores in Dallas. Jewelry is something, I guess, that becomes more popular, less popular, depending on the era. But is there anything changing in the industry?
Yes and no. Diamonds are still very popular. Just FYI, we have a lot of younger people that don't want blood diamonds. They want an old diamond that is by miners that were treated fairly in South Africa, or they want a synthetic or a diamond substitute that doesn't have the connotation of that. I mean, so these are different genres that you have to pay attention to. We are more of an older store, where maybe instead of a solitaire, you might want a diamond band or a sapphire or a ruby as your center stone, something a little different. The trends, you have to pay attention to what's going on with the trends. So I go to many trade shows, one trade show in particular in Tucson. There's a Tucson Gem and Mineral Show that's exciting, it's new, it's fun. So I get ideas, I get inspired. And I go to as many seminars as I possibly can, because it is changing, and the competition from different genres, from auction houses to eBay to first dibs. I mean, it's very much consumer driven, and the brick and mortar stores has to really pay attention and be able to turn on a dime. So it's exciting right now.
Well, it's not your great grandfather's business anymore, but I'm a firm believer that one of the reasons why businesses stand out is less about the product and more about the customer service. So as I've been listening between the lines with you, you talked about your cast of characters. You probably have a very laid-back customer service, and you take care of your customers from A to Z. Is that correct?
Sure. I mean, a great story is one of my good customers and friends called me. I was in the car, and I was driving home. It was 8 o'clock at night, and he says, "Charles, I've got a jewelry emergency. My wife looked at a pendant yesterday in the store. I need you to bring it to the house now." I said, "Now?" He said, "Yeah, I need you to go to the store, get it out of the safe, put it in a box, put a ribbon around it, and bring it to me." So you have to be able to do that in Dallas, Texas, to make sure your customers are happy 24/7. And I've decided that's just the way it's going to be. I have my cell phone on, and if someone needs to ask a question or send a text or answer an email, there's no downtime anymore, because that's what everybody else is doing.
You started your business, used a word which I'm not going to repeat, but the word I'm going to use is naive when you started your business. Is there any advice you'd give to somebody that wants to start their own business, be it retail or otherwise, knowing what you went through to get both of your businesses going here in Dallas?
I love that question. And I tell people that if you're going to go into sales, the first thing to be is a consumer first. Decide what you want to do and how you would like to be treated. And consequently, if you understand that, you can build a better mousetrap to serve that person or whatever service you want to provide. And then decide what segment of the market you want to be in. You know, we've gone after several different markets, but we don't go after everything. And that's important. And make sure you've got plenty of access to capital. Don't be undercapitalized. That's shooting yourself in the foot before you can get out of the gate. And my father-in-law shared with me this. It was a successful entrepreneur. He says, if you're not advertising, you need to advertise to go out of business. And he said, you've got to promote all the time. And that sticks with me now, even though he's gone. He's still on my shoulder. When we don't advertise, I can feel the difference in the store.
Well, you've had a lot of success. We've talked about a few things up to this point about what you're doing. What would you say is a secret to your success for Skybull Fine Jewelry?
I think our secret is, besides customer service, what happens is if you provide a seamless transaction the client wants to send you referrals, and your referrals are the best. The referrals are probably not going to shop too hard anywhere else. They're going to give you every opportunity to make the sale. You tell the consumer, the customer, that you're a straight shooter. This is what you're going to get, and you follow up and make sure they understand that. And your attitude, to have a winning and positive attitude, is imperative. And you know, you treat your client the way you would want to be treated. And if you do that, then they're going to come back for birthdays, anniversaries, gifts, graduation. And my dad always told me, he says, don't accept a no unless you really have to. And that was good advice. And we do a fair amount of giving back to community. I always bring in a summer intern just to make maybe a little difference in their life, and have really enjoyed doing that.
Well, we've talked about some of the people in your life, obviously your great-grandfather, your grandfather, your father, your father-in-law. Any other mentors that had a big impact on what you have done or the person you've become?
Well, believe it or not, you know, my stepmom, who lives in Lubbock and just turned 70, always believed that I could do it. And a lot of times you don't get that from your mom or dad or brother or sister. You have someone slightly from the outside will come in and say, you know, I believe you can get this done and stick with it, or, you know, strokes, regardless of how bad you make mistakes, that, you know, put that behind you and keep rolling. And she still does that to this day.
Well, tell everybody how they can find out more about Skybell Fine Jewelry.
We've got a nice website that's up. It's skybellfinejewelry.com. My wife is working with me now. Lynn is doing a great job on social media, Facebook and Instagram. But if you have any questions, you can reach us locally at phone number 214-691-5123. And I'll be happy to answer questions about new purchases, estate liquidation, appraisals. There's a lot to owning fine jewelry, and I tell people this all the time when I lecture, please get your merchandise insured. It's not that expensive, insurance is not prohibitive, and you sleep better at night.
And the person to appraise that prior to getting insured is Charles Skybell.
Correct.
Well, Charles, this has been a terrific show. Thank you very much for being a playmaker.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Speaking with Charles Skybell, Charles is the owner of Skybell Fine Jewelry in Preston Center in Dallas. It's great having Charles on the show, and thank you for all of you listening to us. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com where you can get all of our past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we'll be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.
Talkshow.com, and we'll be back with more Playmakers.